20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything in favor of the green and gold. My name is Mike Welland, and joining me, as always, Tyler Grzegorek. And before we get to all the big Packer news and our big topic of the day, Tyler, you have kind of a big weekend coming up. You're wrapping up college. You're starting to move. I guess, how's everything going, and are you ready for the next step of your life?
I don't know if I'll ever be ready, you know. I'm just kind of going through the motions right now, and it's all kind of happening so fast. You know, family's flying down this weekend. I'm sorry, next weekend for the graduation. So there's a lot going on, especially like you mentioned, I'm moving around a little bit. So kind of just trying to keep my head down and get through it right now. But it's all going by so quickly. So I'm ready, though.
I know the feeling. So everyone get online and give him a big congratulations. Wish him the best on Twitter. I know we could all really use something like that, and it's a good thing for a good guy to get through college and to move on. But either way, as we turn our attention toward Packer football, big game against the Cardinals Sunday afternoon, starting 12 noon Central Standard Time from Lambeau Field. One of the worst teams in football against one of the biggest underachievers in football in 2018. Packers are favored by 14 points. Hopefully they can cover that. But it's going to help a lot with the biggest news as far as injuries go. Randall Cobb appears to be set to play. David Bakhtiari apparently is looking a lot more promising to play with his knee injuries. And Kevin King has been working with the team again as well. So if they can get all three of those guys back for a game like this, this could be the perfect game to, I don't want to say tune-up game, but a perfect game to get them going, to really help them kind of get back on the right track and maybe get a back-to-back win stretch, a winning streak going, because they still mathematically are alive, but they need to win out, and that starts this week, and getting injury returns would go a long way toward that.
Yeah, and before I say what I'm going to say regarding the draft and tanking, it makes no sense for this team to tank. Like, wherever they finish, they're probably going to finish somewhere in the 10 to 16 range, and when you start getting into that, you know, part of the draft, it's just not worth it. You know, finish the season strong. And this is going to be a good opportunity to get a good head start on doing just that. You know, I want to see this team get healthy and put together a few good wins to end the year, you know, end the year on a positive note. And if they can go win all five games and somehow scrape their way into the playoffs, then so be it. But, you know, I definitely want this team to finish strong down the stretch. So this is a good opportunity to do that. And I'm pretty excited for Sunday, considering that they're taking on the local Cardinals for me. So, you know, it's actually pretty funny living in Arizona and trying to talk to the Cardinals fans because they hate Packers. They hate the Packers at all. Like, so it's going to be a good one.
Well, they still have nightmares about Jeff Janis, but I agree with you with your thoughts on tanking. I'm glad you brought that up just because I've never understood the value of any sport in tanking. As a fan, I would not be able to understand watching your team basically intentionally lose. It would take the joy out of it for me. It's just one of those things where it's just something that it's, I think it sets a bad culture in your locker room when you talk about losing to try and get better for the future. It's, I think we're seeing that in basketball a little bit more. We saw it in baseball. I think if that starts seeping into the NFL, I think it's going to be very dangerous dealing with 63 different personalities in a locker room. And that goes into what we're going to be talking about in a little bit about coaching. I think that kind of attitude can be very toxic and dangerous. So I think I agree with you. I think tanking is a bad thing. Matt Straits just wrote a very good article, and Packers talk about it. So go and read that as well, guys. A very good article about why the Packers should not be tanking. And so, but moving on very quickly before we get to our main topic, Randall Cobb had some big comments as well about Aaron Rodgers this week about he thinks he's going to go and light it up. So I guess, what, Tyler, I'll go to you. What are your thoughts on Randall Cobb? And is this confidence misguided?
You know, this is not the first time he says something like that. He's been a little bit more vocal in the media this year than in past years from what I can remember. And it's not the first time he says something like that this year, and it really hasn't come to fruition yet. So we'll see. You know, Rodgers is rocking the stash or whatever, and he seems happy. but I mean, these are all obviously photo ops and stuff, so from practice. But we'll see what the team can do. We're returning to Lambeau for the first time in a few weeks now. Well, actually, I take that back. They played Miami, but returning to Lambeau could be good for this team, and we'll see if Rodgers can get on track.
No, I agree. I think it'll be interesting to see, and I think he's closer to Cobb than anybody else on the roster right now, so I think Randall has a good idea of what's going on, so we'll see what happens Sunday. You're right. That, again, 12 noon start time, Packers-Cardinals from Lambeau Field. But as we turn our attention toward our main topic, I think everyone agrees that there's a pretty good chance, unless they go on a Super Bowl run, that this is going to be the end of the Mike McCarthy era. And even if they do go on a run, it may be the end of him anyway. I can see him retiring if the Packers were to somehow pull off the miracle and go the entire way. But with that being in mind, we thought about maybe trying to build, using current coaches or coaches who are currently being talked about to be head coaches next year, would you build a perfect coach? And using 7 criteria involving time management, game planning, making adjustments in the game, using creativity with innovations, roster management, media relations, and relationships with the assistant coaches and locker room temperament, we tried to make some sort of monstrosity of what would be the perfect coach that is currently coaching in the NFL today or is seen as a potential coach for the NFL next year. And coming up, some consensus was a little difficult, but I do think we did came up with a good group of guys that would kind of combine things, and it's a combination of new and old school guys. And I think if you were to have the trait of every single one of these guys as a coach, your team would be basically unstoppable. So, Tyler, I think we'll just jump right into it, and we'll start with time management, because that's a big critique of Coach McCarthy is his time management, especially late in the first half. And so when coming up with that, I thought back to the first half scenarios, and that goes right to arguably the GOAT, and that's Bill Belichick. He is known for having the double-up method where he will defer in the first half, get the ball with a minute and a half left in the second quarter, go down and score, get the kickoff, go down and score again, and have a 14-point swing in about 2 minutes of game time. So I guess what would your thoughts of Belichick as your time management expert as far as building a coach?
Yeah, and with time management overall is game management. I don't think there's a better coach in the NFL than Bill Belichick when you're talking about this kind of, when you're talking about just the fundamentals of coaching, you know, the things that the coach needs to get right. And this is what Bill Belichick does, and he does it better than any other coach in the league. And it's really funny because this is something that I've seen as a joke in social media, but you talked about the 14-point swing in about a two-minute span. That's something that people have been doing in Madden for years, and it's just kind of funny because it feels like it's such a simple concept. But for some reason, Bill Belichick is always able to make things like that happen. He's always able to get his team into positions to succeed, and I think that's ultimately what you're looking for in a game or time manager.
No, I agree. And even a better example would be look at the comeback they had a couple years ago in the Super Bowl against Atlanta. Coming down from the score they were, there was not that much time when it started happening. So he was able to manage it so well, get his guys ready and get his substitutions ready to go in time. And I don't think anybody has a better idea of where the clock is than the guy known as Double B in the hoodie. But that's just the first part. That's one part of 7, and we didn't repeat. We made sure we didn't repeat coaches, so that's the best option for him. And then moving on to making a game plan. And here we went with the youngest coach in the NFL and the new wunderkind all over the league and everyone's media darling. I still think jury's still out a little bit on Sean McVay, but I do respect what he's done as a game planner. If teams can figure him out, we'll see. But when it comes to making that plan, especially for the first quarter of the game, he has very few peers as far as getting that first quarter set going.
Yeah, no, McVay has been, I think he's been a little bit refreshing because it's just something, he's kind of revitalized this whole concept of offense within the NFL. Obviously the Patriots have been doing it for a while, but, you know, he has brought the idea of putting a all-star offense on the field just to another level. And you can see that in the way that he's providing his players with opportunities to make plays during the games, you know, exploiting other teams' weaknesses, just finding that niche that he needs to take advantage and put his team ultimately in a position to win the game by scoring just a ton of points.
No, I agree. I think I think there's times where he's made some off adjustments, as I think he struggled a little bit in the second half of the Packer game a few weeks ago. But in the first quarter, he is absolutely scary how quickly his team can move up and down the field. And it helps to have guys like Todd Gurley and Brandon Cooks and Jared Goff, but a good coach has to be able to get those guys in the good position. And we've seen plenty of coaches do really well with the first 15 plays, but then fall off. McVay doesn't quite do that, and he knows exactly how to get his team in the right spot for the rest of the game. And I think that goes well to a very strong game plan. So right now we have a combination of Bill Belichick and Sean McVay making this abomination. Moving on to making adjustments in-game. So following your game plan, if things aren't going quite your way, how can you change it, make some different types of moves? And this is the one where we had the most debate before we started recording this. My original choice was Mike Zimmer, but you convinced me to move on to Josh McDaniels, who is becoming a very popular choice for head coaching gig again after he struggled in Denver when he was really, really young, and then whatever happened last year in Indy, that debacle. But that being said, he is phenomenal at adjusting his offense to what needs to be done in the second half, and we saw that in the Packer game a couple weeks ago. And McDaniels is such an innovative mind as well, and he's such a very strong-minded personality that when he's an offensive coordinator, teams buy into the changes he makes. And just seeing how he does it with Tom Brady, who I think is older than him, kind of shows how good McDaniels could be at that. If he ever gets the rest of the part of being a head coach down, he's a good one. But as far as making changes to your plan in the game, I don't know if there's many better.
Well, and it's interesting that you mentioned the age, because that's been one of the biggest topics of concern for Aaron Rodgers and the new incoming head coach, who is probably going to be a younger guy. I think McDaniels is probably the only one out of all the younger guys being mentioned right now where Rodgers would not butt heads with him. He would have a amount of respect for Josh McDaniels, and I think that would be a really good fit in that department. And it's obviously an important department to consider. Now, you mentioned how McDaniels drew up some in-game adjustments against the Packers, and it's not even big plays. Like, it's not even like, oh, he ran play action on this and, you know, ran the ball on this off the same look. No, it's the little things. For instance, he took advantage of the Packers' aggressiveness in the secondary, and all it took was a little two-second look to the flat from Brady, and the corners jumped it, and the next thing you know, he's got Josh Gordon running deep. And that's part of the secondary as well, but, you know, that's part of the game of coaching, and that's why sometimes it can be so fun to watch, because it can just be a battle, you know, back and forth, like a ping-pong match, and McDaniels seems to win that battle more often than not.
No, I agree, and that's why I thought it was going to be Mike Zimmer, was because defensively he does the same thing, but McDaniels is such a great adjustment guy that when you see a play like that, you're not surprised. And that even goes, again, back to the Super Bowl a couple years ago, getting James White 13 catches or whatever, however many it was, and setting Super Bowl records with a running back. And I think if you can just pull that part of McDaniels and put that into a separate coach, you have the makings of the most dangerous offense the league has ever seen. And so then...
Well, one thing, too, Mike Pettine would actually fit in this category. One guy we didn't really talk about. He's been amazing doing what he has done with the little that he has had. It's been amazing. And not saying that this is going to happen, but I would have absolutely no problem if the Packers were say, hey, do you want to get a shot at being our head coach? And then they go out and get some young, hotshot offensive coordinator. I think that would be perfect as well.
I think it would be, too. I know he said he doesn't want to coach, but I think this might be the one chance where he would think about it. But I agree with you. He does a good job in-game, and especially you look at the third quarters for the Packers defenses, I have been usually pretty strong. And that shows the strengths of Mike Pettine. But our fourth category, kind of building off this, has been innovation and creativity. And it's easier to look on the offensive end, which is what we did. I'm trying to think of other defensive coaches who were good at that kind of innovation. But offensively, Matt Nagy has been a revelation as the Bears head coach this year. And it really hurts to say, because the Bears still suck. But with what Nagy's done last year in Kansas City as the coordinator, and now... and what he did with Alex Smith before that when he was just the quarterback's coach, And now what he's doing with Chicago with Trubisky and Cohen and Allen Robinson and Gabriel and all the weapons they have there, it's really, really strong. And he has had moments where he's faded down the stretch in late in games, especially that week one game. But as the year's gone on, he's gotten better and better. And the plays he designs are beautiful to watch if you look at the All-22.
They really are. And not only are they creative or innovational, they're simple. They're simple for Trubisky, and ultimately that's gone a long way to his success this year and his emergence in his second year. And that's ultimately what is important of this, of the head coach or whoever's calling plays. You have to make it simple for your team, your players, to make their reads and just react quickly. The quicker these players can play, just the more it puts their athleticism on display. And I think that that's what we're seeing from Matt Nagy. And like you said, some of his plays are just gorgeous. And it does suck because the Bears still suck. But it's, you know, I can appreciate good football when I see it. And that's what's going on in Chicago, sadly.
I agree. Yeah, got to give credit where credit is due. Hopefully he gets hired by a better team in a few years. But right now, It's good to see. It's fun to watch Nagy's offenses go, even though they are wearing the wrong uniforms. Nextly up, we kind of move into the locker room where we have – we list it as roster management, but it's also, I guess, fostering a culture and fostering personalities. And here, this is the only time we've found two different coaches. As much as it's going to be controversial, we put Mike McCarthy as one of them just because – you look at what he did coming in 2013 years ago and balancing the Favre situation with Aaron Rodgers and helping groom those guys to help them help each other during the ways, and the way he balanced injuries in 2010 and with the bad defense in 2011, the injuries in 13, 14, 16. As much as we rag on him now, he has done a very good job with that locker room, and his time seems to have run out and that's starting to fade a little bit. But when he is the new face in that locker room, and when he is the guys that people are confident in, he is a spectacular management of talent and fostering a culture and fostering a guy group to be one team, no matter how many guys are out or in, and just going on from there. And the other one was Bruce Arians, where Arians is the same way, looking how what he did when he took over for Chuck Pagano following Chuck's treatment for cancer in Indianapolis, then moving on to Arizona and dealing with personalities in the Carson Palmer and dealing with all the veterans there and balancing them out. And I think those two guys who have been around the block quite a bit are really good at fostering that kind of locker room that you want to have as a coach.
Yeah, and it is important to give McCarthy credit where it's due, because as much as we might be frustrated with this head coach, what he has given this organization is due to his management of the roster and the players. Other fans of other teams hate the Green Bay Packers. Why is that? Because they win a lot of games. They signify a winner. When you look at the Green Bay Packers, you think winner, and that's because of McCarthy. And Bruce Arians has that similar aura about him. He just kind of wins wherever he goes, and that's an important thing to have in a coach. And with that comes the culture and the attitude and the mentality, all of that kind of bundled into one, and ultimately, you need your coach to manage these guys and know how to motivate them and know how to, you know, pick your battles. Those kinds of things are just as important as what play you're going to call on 3rd and 5. So, you know, that is why McCarthy has had this job for so long and why he is so well regarded around the league and why he will be respected and given opportunities moving forward.
No, I agree. I think, and there's a reason he's a guy who may be getting some consideration for the Hall of Fame in 20 years. So we never know, but I agree with you on all the points you made with those two guys. The locker room is more important than people think it really is. And having been in a locker room, having played, officiated, helped coach, things like that, it really does matter a ton. Also, so does also working with the media. Obviously, both of us technically were media by doing this podcast. I'm professionally a radio guy, so I do media all the time, interviews and press conferences. That is a very big part of a coach because that sets the public image of your team, and that does a very big thing as far as how the world will kind of react to you. and very few top that than Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh. We were down between him and John Harbaugh from the AFC North, obviously not Hugh Jackson. But with Tomlin, for all the shortcomings the fans have toward him as well in Pittsburgh, kind of similar to how people view McCarthy here in Green Bay, Tomlin always puts on a good image of his team and how he navigated the Le'Veon Bell situation this year in Pittsburgh and getting James Conner going in there and dealing with the personalities of Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown and James Harrison for all those years and guys like that shows a very good personality and a good presence. And he is a diplomat behind a microphone.
Yeah, you know, the other thing you're looking for in a head coach with when they engage with the media is you watch somebody that has a little bit of spunk, a little bit of attitude, you know, but the right amount. And I think Mike Tomlin's a good mix of all of that. He's going to give the media what they want, but he's not going to give them too much. And you might even get a good chuckle here and then. So I think that Mike Tomlin's a good mix of all of those and is definitely the guy I would want working with my media if it were my team.
Absolutely. I also look back at the fact that Tomlin, when he called out the officials, what was it, 2 months ago about some of the calls that were being made, and you look at it really since he made those comments publicly that the game has gone back to what we've expected a little bit more. There's been a little bit more of letting it play, a little bit fewer ticky-tack calls, especially when it comes to the quarterbacks, but seeing what he does, you're right, with that spunk, with the little extra zest that he brings really helps a lot, and I think that's the Pittsburgh way too, because Bill Cowher was the same way, and the Rooneys did the same type of thing. And I think having that part of Tomlin in our buildup of a coach, I think goes a long way to help this team publicly. And our seventh and final spot was: how is your coach going to work with his assistants? How is he going to keep his temperament, and how is he going to deal with all the moving parts inside of a locker room, inside of the coaching rooms, the meeting rooms, the film, everything like that? And to me, this was a no-brainer. This was Andy Reid. He's got the best coaching tree in football right now. When you look at who's all head coaches with him, wherever he's gone, whether it's Philadelphia, even back when he was a coach in Green Bay, and now in Kansas City, his players respect him, his players play for him, his assistants really like working with him, and he seems to be a guy who nobody has a bad thing to say about. And so I think Andy Reid, I think, for my money, is the second best coach in football right now behind only Belichick, and I think this goes a long way toward getting that title.
Yeah, and the Andy Reid coaching tree has supplanted all other coaching trees as the one that you want to pluck coaches from. You know, Eric Bieniemy, I think that's how you say his name, I probably butchered it, but he's even garnering interest, and he's a first-year offensive coordinator. And so, yeah, and so is Nagy. So these guys are just... They're jumping into positions. That coaching staff churn is amazing over there, specifically in the offensive side of the ball. But when you look at what Reid has done just over the years in his multiple teams, he again, you know, we talked about this with Bruce Arians and Mike McCarthy and just fostering a winning environment. Andy Reid is doing so with a different coach every other year. You know, he's doing it with different partners every other year. And it's just amazing to see what he's done. And he could have fit a number of our categories as well, as could have Bill Belichick and a couple of these guys. They could have, you know, spanned multiple categories. But I think this is what he really does best, is just kind of managing who he's working with and how he works with them.
No, I agree. And he's done this now with two different teams, with Philadelphia and Kansas City. And just looking at his coaching tree, like he said, we have Matt Nagy, we have Doug Peterson. I think Vrabel might have been part of his coaching staff for a little bit as well. But just kind of going on, building off that, looking at what he did in Philadelphia, and just when it comes to being the leader of the coaching staff, I think there's nobody better than Reid, because they actually like working with him. I think they're scared of Belichick. But so when you look at this coach that we're building, this is a coach we're going to have the time management skills of Bill Belichick, the game plan of Sean McVay, who's going to adjust in-game like Josh McDaniels with the plays of Matt Nagy. And then in the locker room, we're going to have the culture fostered by Mike McCarthy and Bruce Arians, talking to the media like Mike Tomlin, and working with your assistants like Andy Reid. I think if you combine those eight coaches in those seven categories, and if you have the right players, that will be the first ever 19-0 team.
You know, I think I think you should give this coach about $20 million a year, because they're going to win you every single game regardless of who you have on the team. And you won't need the money to pay players, because these guys will just be scheming guys open, motivating guys that are, you know, low-end draft picks to play like first-round draft picks. This is the best coach of all time.
I agree. This is number two. It's still behind Vince Lombardi.
Oh, fair enough.
That's never going to change. But either way, folks, what do you guys think? Let us know. Let us know on Twitter. You can find me at Mike Wendland, Tyler at Tyler_Grez, right? Absolutely. So as we start to wind things down, Tyler, what are you writing about? Where can people find you?
So actually, the website I was writing for, NFL Analysis Network, has joined forces with another website called Clutch Points. App is what it's called. It's a website, but they also have an app, obviously. So the NFL Analysis Network is now heading up their NFL section and writing the analysis content for them. So that's where you can find me and all of my writings moving forward.
All right, and you can find me on Packers Talk. I have an article coming out on this morning. It'll be out. It's going to be a thank you letter to Mike McCarthy. So just kind of getting that out of the way in case things do change and he is done after this year. He deserves some credit for the work he's done over the past over a decade, almost decade and a half now. Also find myself on Dairyland Express, a fan-sided affiliate. And also you can always listen to me on the Packaday podcast here and on now Dairyland Talk. I'll be talking about the Milwaukee Brewers. So again, don't forget, tune in tomorrow for our game preview, Packers and Cardinals. Again, 12 noon on Sunday Central Time from Lambeau Field. Looks to be everyone back healthy, including Bakhtiari Cobb and potentially Kevin King as well. Packers 14-point favorites. And so for Tyler Grzegorik, this is Mike Wendland signing off. We'll talk to you guys again in just a couple of weeks for one more time in 2018. And don't forget, we'll be bringing you guys podcasts all in 2019 as well. So until then, as always, go Pack, go, and get loud Lambeau.
Jones continues in the backfield behind Rodgers. Valdez Scantling to the right side, Devontae to the left, EQ on the wing left side, Rodgers under center on 2nd and 7 of the Vikings 15, ball to the right hash, Rodgers takes back to throw, swings left side, got Adams, makes the turn to the pylon, and he's forced out of bounds. He's in play for the touchdown. 2nd and 2, 6-yard line of Minnesota, tied at 7 apiece. Graham, tight end right side of the line, 3 receivers bunt to the left, Rodgers under center. It's motion to the right, here's the pitch, Jones around the left end. He's got Bakhtiari blocking in front, Jones makes the turn to the pylon, to the end zone for the touchdown. Slot left with 3 receivers left, 1 to the right, Rodgers shotgun, Williams to his right. Rodgers takes the snap, looks, wings it over the middle. Get Jimmy Graham between the hash marks, across the 35, out to the 36-yard line of Green Bay. Out of the shotgun, 3 receivers left. Snap to Rodgers, looking downfield, steps up. He throws deep down the right side. He's got Devontae down the sideline, across the 30, into the Minnesota 25-yard line.